neutralize the virus before it reaches your brain and you begin to show symptoms. Neutralize it? You mean kill it? If possible, said the doctor. There are injections that can eliminate the virus, but unfortunately we don't carry such medications aboard ship. Who would expect cases of rabies to show up on an interplanetary liner? Deirdre caught the plural. You said cases. Yes. The woman you are replacing, she died of rabies on the trip out from Earth. Infirmary. I could die? Deirdre cried. If untreated, said Dr. Pohan. But you said you don't have the vaccine. The treatment requires human rabies immunoglobulin. We were able to fabricate a small amount of same in the ship's pharmacy, but it wasn't enough to save my patient. The virus had spread through her nervous system and into her brain. Deirdre fought down an urge to scream. Forcing her voice to stay calm, steady, she asked, Could you produce enough of it to treat me? For a century-long moment, Dr. Pohan did not reply. At last, he steepled his fingers and said softly, We can try, Miss Ambrose. It's a rather difficult synthesis, but we can try. And if you can't? The doctor shrugged. The alternative is to freeze you until we arrive at Jupiter. I've already contacted the medical officer at Station Gold, and he has instructed his staff to produce the medication. It will be ready for you when you arrive there.
Rabies, Deirdre repeated, her voice trembling just a bit.
It is very strange, said Dr. Pohan. Neither you nor the unfortunate woman who died was bitten or scratched by a rabid animal. She was from Cellini, a well-respected biologist. Of course, she frequently visited Earth. She could have contracted the disease there.
And she died.
Apparently, she had been infected some time before boarding the ship. The pre-boarding medical examination missed her condition entirely. The automated scans were not programmed to check for rabies, unfortunately. By the time she began to exhibit symptoms, it was too late to save her.
And she died, Deirdre repeated in a whisper.
Dr. Pohan put on his professional smile once again. Please do not worry unduly. We have caught your case early. You will not die from it. I am almost certain.
That word, almost, blared in Deirdre's mind. Deirdre walked like an automaton from the infirmary to the elevators and went blindly, unthinkingly, back to the dining room. It was closed, too late for breakfast, too early for lunch. It didn't matter. She had no appetite. How could I get rabies? She asked herself a few thousand times as she headed back to her stateroom. By the time she got there, the room had already been cleaned, the bed made neatly, the lavatory sparkling. Deirdre plunked herself down on the spongy little chair in front of the compartment's computer. Rabies, she repeated silently. She told the computer to look it up. She heard a thump on her door. With a sigh, she got up and slid it open. Dorn was standing there, his broad body filling the doorframe. Behind him, Deirdre saw Andy Corvus, grinning shyly at her, and Jaeger, his smile almost a leer. Corvus was clutching a large aluminum box, gripping the handles on its sides in both his hands. We're going down to the dolphin tank, Andy said enthusiastically before any of the others could speak. Want to come with us? Deirdre blinked at him.
The dolphin tank?
Jaeger piped up. The ship's carrying 6 dolphins out to Jupiter. Andy wants to talk to 'em.
Come on,
Andy coaxed. I'll connect you to the dolphins if you like. The box he was holding was obviously heavy. She could see the tension in his arms.
Why doesn't he ask Dorn to hold it for him? Deirdre wondered. Or at least to help him carry it.
Dorn spoke up. If we're imposing on your privacy...
No, Deirdre decided. It's perfectly all right. I could use a little diversion this morning.
The four of them started down the passageway toward the elevators, Corvus lugging the big case all by himself.
Catherine Westfall was deep in discussion with Grant Archer at the research station orbiting Jupiter. The discussion, though, was not a conversation. Australia was still so far from Jupiter that it took electronic communications, traveling at the speed of light, slightly more than 21 minutes to span the distance between the ship and the Thomas Gold station. So their discussion consisted of alternating monologues. One would talk, and then some 42 minutes later, the other could respond. Archer's serious, steady-eyed face filled the wall screen in Mrs. Westfall's sitting room. As she reclined in a softly yielding chaise lounge, she studied the scientist's intense, oh-so-earnest expression. He's rather good-looking, she thought. Boyish, almost, except for that little grey beard. Married. Happily, from what his dossier says. At least he's been married to the same woman for more than 20 years.
And although we're considerably over budget in several areas,
Archer was saying, as if reading from a text,
I feel certain that once you're here and have the chance to see what we're trying to accomplish, you'll agree that our work is too close to success to be inhibited by budget cuts.
She smiled at him. Naive fool, she thought. Scientists are all alike. What I'm doing is so important that it mustn't be stopped or even cut back. Money is no object. Of course it isn't. It's not their money that they're spending.
Archer had stopped talking. His image stood frozen on her display screen. That meant that he was finished for the time being and was waiting for her reply to reach him.
Westfall did not need a prepared script. Keeping her smile in place, she said, I'm sure that the work you're doing is very important, Dr. Archer, but the economic facts of life must be taken into account, whether we like it or not. Sitting up a little straighter, she went on, Your research work is funded out of the profits made by the scoop ship operations, as you know. The market for scooping fusion fuels out of Jupiter's atmosphere has leveled off. We are no longer expanding our construction of new fusion power plants on Earth, and even the market for fusion torchships has gone rather flat. That means that the profits have leveled off, and you can't expect increases in your funding. I'm afraid there's nothing that I, or you, or anyone can do about that. You must cut back on your budget, just like the rest of us.
She hesitated, wondering inwardly,
Should I let him know that I'm aware of this giant submersible he's building?
No, she decided. I want to see the shock on his face in person, up close.
She spoke a few more meaningless words of farewell, ending the discussion. The screen went blank grey. Catherine Westfall leaned back in the lounge, as if exhausted by the morning's exertion. But she was thinking, I know what he'll do now. He'll rush to get that submersible finished and send a crew back into the ocean before I can cut off his funding altogether. He'll push his people to their utmost. He'll be in a sweat to go back into the ocean and kill more of his underlings, just like his predecessor killed my sister.
Dolphin tank. It was like being underwater. The dolphin tank took up 4 entire decks of the torch ship. 4 levels had been ripped out and filled with salt water, their outer bulkheads reinforced to withstand the pressure. The central core, where the elevator and ship's plumbing and electrical conduits ran, passed through the giant glass-steel-walled tank. Deirdre gasped
in awe as she and